I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
Sober by the grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and it's a true privilege to be able to stand up here in front of my home group and in front of a group that, you know, helped save my life and get me on the right track and got me in that book and told me to do exactly what it said, you know, nothing more, nothing less, and I did it, you know, and I'm able to stand here and share the message that was brought to me with depth and weight, and maybe somebody else could hear it, you know. Maybe somebody else could make a turning point in their life where they're no longer seeking a solution in a drink and maybe a solution in this higher power thing, you know, and then that's what, you know, that's what happened to me. A brief recap on 1, 2, and 3. You know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives become unmanageable. What does that mean to me? I said last week about how, you know, if I call myself an alcoholic, if I have alcoholism, it means I have a few certain things. I have to have these things, you know. I have to have these things to be here. You know, the third tradition, long form, talks about all those who suffer from alcoholism and wish to recover are welcome. It says other things too, but, you know, I have to suffer from alcoholism and I have to have the desire to recover, you know, through the 12 steps to be here, you know, and I have both of those things, you know. But what does it mean to be alcoholic? I have this mental twist where I have these strange mental blank spots and, you know, and when I just like walk into the bar and drink when I don't want to, and then once I start drinking, it's virtually impossible for me to stop, because something happens inside that I can't really explain. It's just I want more and more and more, and it's never ever satisfied. It's always intensified, and I stop when I black out, when I pass out, when I run out of money, when I run out of booze, you know, when I get locked up, when I, you know, wind up in detox again, and that's when I stop, you know, and when I finally do stop, I can't stay stopped. You know, there's no mental defense that I could come up with in here that works permanently. Now, I could lock myself in a room for you know, 10 days, 20 days, and 30 days, but eventually I'm going to unlock that door, and I'm going to walk straight down to the bar and have no mental recollection and walk right into the bar and drink. You know, and then another part is I have this spiritual malady. I have this thing inside of me that when I put down the drink, I clean up on the outside real good. You know, I start showering, I brush my teeth, and I get a haircut, you know, I save some money, and I clean up on the outside really, really good, but I'm dying on the inside. You know, on the inside it hurts so bad, you know, and I have pride, and I have ego, and I'll never tell you how I really feel on the inside until, you know, drinking looks like a great idea again, you know. That's what I am, you know, that's what I have, you know, that's what alcoholism is, and step two, we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, was just a beginning. You know, I had to just be willing to believe or just believe in something. I read We Agnostics with a sponsor. You know, at one point, like I said, the mustard seed was just the fact that the guy on the other side of the table used to drink like me and he didn't anymore. You know, he went through these 12 steps, you know, and it's grown. And I was told that I didn't have to understand this power. I didn't have to, you know, name it. I didn't have to do any of that. I just had to believe that there was something out there way more powerful than me that was going to solve my problem. You know, it wasn't going to keep me sober, you know, one day at a time. And it wasn't going to, like, you know, let me drink tomorrow or whatever. It was going to solve this problem, like, actually solve it. It wasn't, you know, the rooms, you know, it wasn't the people in it. It was, like, this power. This actual power that I had no clue where to look for. And then I was told that it was deep down with inside me. So I had to search diligently, you know, and in the third step, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I talked about that last week. I really weighed the options here. I said, you know, okay, what is it going to look like if I don't do this? You know, what does it look like if I turn like 90% of my will and my life over to the care of God? You know, that's not what it says. It asks for the whole thing. You know, so I weighed the options, and you know, not doing it, I would either be miserable and eventually drink, and for me to drink is to die, or I could, you know, take this leap of faith or whatever you want to say and turn my will and my life over to the care of God and continue with these steps, you know, have the chance of permanent sobriety, have a great life, but I have no clue what it's going to look like. See, that's scary to somebody like me. I like to control every single part of my life. I like to have this person in it because I like them. This person has to stay very far away. I want to live here. I want to make this amount of money, and I want to do all these things. And that's it. You know, that's it. That's what I want. But I had to start living by somebody else's plan, something else's plan. And at first, like I said, it was just the book's plan. And it finally turned into this higher powers plan. But, you know, what are we here for? We're here to, you know, talk about steps 4, 5, and 6 tonight, you know. And in step 3, I made a decision. Right? I made a decision. So what does that mean? So that means I stopped playing God. You know, I stopped running the show. I stopped running my own life. Why? It's very simple. Because I'm terrible at it. I am absolutely horrible at playing God. You know, I'm horrible at making decisions because when it comes down to it, I lie, cheat, and steal to get my own way. You know, I get pissed off at you and I can't forget about what happened to me when I was 4 years old and I'm terrified of tomorrow. And in the book, it talks about it that, you know, we're the actor. You know, we're this actor trying to arrange life to just better suit us. We want everything. If you would just do what I told you to do, it'd be fine. And if I could just get this car and get this job and that girlfriend and if my mom would just stop asking me questions, like everything will be fine. And see, the sick part is that even if all those things happened, I wouldn't feel better. I wouldn't feel better. Even if everybody in the world did exactly what I wanted them to do, I wouldn't feel better because I'm still suffering. I still have this malady that can only be overcome with a spiritual awakening. And in the right, you know, in the third step, one of the best promises in the book, I think, is right after the third step, or right before it. It says, "When the spiritual malady is overcome." So it's talking about like this thing is it can be overcome. You know, I don't have to suffer from fear anymore. I don't have to suffer from resentment. I don't have to worry about being honest to people. It can actually be overcame, and that's a blessing. Then we straighten out mentally and physically. But this spiritual malady can actually be overcome. And how is that? How do you do that? And by first, you start off by making a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, of me. Let's put the mirror up against me and see how I live life. See how what I can do on a life of self-will, you know? And I had to get real honest and real fearless because I'm not stupid. I could see down at the ninth step that I'm probably going to have to go up to some of these people and like, say I'm sorry or some crap, you know, one day. And man, like, that's, you know. But, you know, what am I willing to do? Am I really willing to get sober? Am I really willing to do whatever it takes to get and remain sober? You know, and this was, like, a big turning point for me because, like, you know, I used to come to AA, 1, 2, 3, yeah, definitely, got it. You know, 1, 2, 3, no problem. But I never followed up with any action. No action at all. You know, till I actually sat down and there was nobody watching me anymore and most of the people in my life had given up on me, you know. I sat down and I started writing, you know, fearlessly and honestly and thoroughly, you know. Why am I doing this stuff? You know, why am I writing all these things down? Why am I writing these things that I wanted to take to the grave, these humiliating experiences, these old ideas and prejudices that I had against people, this fear of the future, and then sex inventory? Like, that, whoa. Like, you know, why am I doing this stuff? It's because I'm filled with all this. I'm filled with calamity, and I am extremely blocked off from this higher power. Just because I made a decision in 3 doesn't mean that I'm just rendered white as snow. You know, it doesn't mean that I can just go live my life. Now I have to become unblocked and live by this power and have constant contact with him. So I write all this stuff out, and after I write them out, I send them out, and they are taken from me. You know, I believe that's what happened. So what does the inventory look like? Very basic. They explained it in the book perfectly. There's 3 parts. I did exactly what the book said. There's 3 parts. There's resentment, there's fear, and there's sex inventory. You know, I got down and I got down the causes and conditions and see how I really work. See what makes me, you know, who I was, you know. And I wrote down a list of people. Like I said, half of them I really didn't want to write down, but it was a crucial point in my sobriety. Was I going to write these people down, be thorough and honest, or was I going to leave it off again? You know, and then invariably drink, because that's what happens. It tells us right in the book. Am I going to leave this name off, or am I going to put it on? Trying to keep something to myself. You know, they say it happens to newcomers all the time, and then they drink. You know, I didn't want to ever drink again. You know, so I put those names down for whatever reason. You know, this willingness that appeared inside me one day was still there. The fire was still there to do whatever it took to get and stay sober. So I started writing these names, and then, you know, we get over to the causes, and to be honest, like, half of the reasons why I was resentful at people were fake. Like, they were made up in my head, you know? But that doesn't matter, because just those are just as deadly as things that actually happen, you know? Fancied or real, it talks about. They both have the power to kill, you know? And why do I have to get rid of resentment, you know? Why, you know? Well, it says in the book, you know, it blocks out the sunlight of the spirit, and sanity returns, and for us to, and you know, we drink again, for us to drink is to die, you know? I used to like having resentment. I used to like holding on to things and like thinking about punching you out in the, you know, in the parking lot and think about this stuff, and I used to feed off of it. So one night that you, like, I was told that I was going to have to like have these things removed, that, you know, it was a weird feeling, you know, to not be mad at anybody. That's a weird feeling when you're so used to going about your whole life mad at everybody, you know. But I wrote down these causes, and then you know, I got to the effects. Like, what is it? Why? What does it affect about me? You know, the book has it. You know, it's security, self-esteem, personal sex relations, and ambitions. You know, what did it affect? You know, usually my self-esteem was affected in every single one of them, because I wanted you to think something differently about me, or I had an ambition of, I wanted to be a good son to my mom, but when she called me a liar and a thief, that really messed up my whole good son plan. Like, you know. Or like, I really wanted to be a good boyfriend to my ex-girlfriend, but when I wasn't, that kind of sucked, you know? Mm-hmm. Security, I had people who, like, took money from my family, you know? And no, I deserve to be mad at these people. They took money. No, I can't. See, I'm an alcoholic, and I got to understand that I cannot be angry, you know? So then we get over to my mistakes, you know? What did I do? You know, we actually start taking my inventory, because the whole time I really was taking everybody else's inventory. The book just gets me to do that so I could get into my mistakes. You know, let's see what I did to this person. You know, and the list of what they did was about, you know, 2 or 3 things, and usually the list of what I did was probably about 30 things. You know, and I really realized I had no reason to be resentful at these people. You know. It was stupid, made up in my head, ridiculous, you know? So I wrote down all my mistakes, and there again, I had to be fearless. I had to be absolutely fearless and thorough and realize that this was my shot. This was the window I had, and this was it. You know, if I wasn't fearless and thorough here, I wasn't going to make it. You know, I knew that. So I started to write down everything that came to mind. I would say a little prayer before I did this, and whatever came to my mind is what I figured God wanted me to write down, so I wrote, you know, and I did that. And then, you know, we get into fear inventory. And you know, I said, the book says we listed our fears, you know. I was afraid of the exact opposites of each fear. You know, I was afraid of being single and then terrified of being in a relationship. I was afraid of, you know, not having any money, and I was afraid of winning the lottery. I can't play the lottery. Why? Because I might win $100 million, and then who knows what's going to happen. You know, what if I may buy my own island and just go drink myself to death? Like, I was terrified of that. You know, I was afraid to have, you know, 1,000 friends. I was afraid to have no friends. I was afraid to not go to school, afraid to go to school. And what is that a result of? That's just a result of me relying on myself to try to propel myself through life, you know. I was afraid of staying sober. I was afraid of relapsing. That makes no sense. That's how far I brought myself. That's where I could get me, you know, right here. You know, and not even here. It stopped working years ago. You know, I can't rely on myself to make myself feel better. I can't rely on myself to make myself fearless. You know, I can't do those things. And then once I looked at them, you know, it says, like in the book, we the fear prayer, we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what you would have us be. I always would get afraid and do something, run around and like try to do this or distract myself or like call up like 100 new guys or like do this. But it says to be. You know, we just sit and we be. Because everything's going to be all right. See, in my head, it's just BS that everything's falling down. But everything is always going to be all right, even when I don't think so. You know? So then we get into sex inventory, and I get to see my interaction with women for the first time on pen and paper. See, I always thought I was a pretty good, you know, pretty good guy that just drank a lot and did some messed up things when he was drunk. But let's really look at what sex relations is to me. This is so important, even going forward, because, like, I get some sense of ease and comfort from women, you know. I from relationships, from sex, like that stuff can momentarily fill that, like mistakenly fill that hole inside of me too, and then when it's gone, I'm stuck by myself again, and I'm like, what the hell was that? You know, so I had to really start looking how selfish I was with things like sex, you know, how selfish. I thought I was supposed to just go up to, you know, people, go up to women and tell them whatever they wanted to hear. And as soon as they liked me, I'd be like, cool, you're mine now. You know, this is mine. Look. And then I was going to show everybody, look what, this is mine. Everybody, this is mine. It's mine. It's not yours. It's not yours. It's not even hers. Is mine. And I thought that's how you were supposed to live life. I thought you were supposed to be as dishonest as possible. You know, tell them you work on the stock market, drive a whatever, and then you're supposed to get the prize, which is the girl. You know? And I did that every single time. And I had a repetition or a routine of every single relationship that I was in. It was selfish to get into it from the start because I wanted something from you. Because if you thought I was okay, then I must not be that bad. You know, because on the inside, I felt like nothing. You know, I felt like absolutely nothing. And this is so important going forward. You know, even in sobriety, like, you know, like, what am I doing? Am I just being honest? You know, like I hear so many people say, like, oh, no, but I'm honest. You know, no, that's not it. I can't be selfish anymore. I can't try to fill that void with anything or anyone but God. And that's the truth, because I have alcoholism, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm doomed to drink again if I do that. You know, I could mask anything. I could make anything feel like ease and comfort. Gambling, sex, eating, all this stuff, it can feel like fake ease and comfort. The only thing that permanent ease and comfort comes from is God and self-sacrifice and you know, like, just God and these steps, man. Doing for others. You know, so it was time to write this all out, and then it was time to, you know, do this fifth step, you know, and admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, and I never did that before in my life to anybody, you know. I think a few brief moments, I would say I'm sorry, or say I did something, or like rarely tell the truth, but I never did that before. Have an honest conversation with somebody, no way, they might find out something about me. I can't do that. They may judge me for the rest of my life. What if I see them again? You know, but I trusted a man, and you know, when that day came, we sat down, and he told me, listen, just say what's on the paper. Anything more, it's just justifying it or some shit. He's like, anything more, just BS or whatever. And he was right, man. He was right. We're getting down to causes and conditions here. I'm not writing a novel here. I want to get down to what defeats me. What is it? Why do I do the things I do? Why do I, you know, get so miserable when I stop drinking? Why is this? You know? Well, somewhere along the way in the fourth step, I realized that it has absolutely nothing to do with drinking. It has nothing to do with it. Nothing. What it is the way I live. The way I live is so miserable, so wrong, and it hurts so bad that all of a sudden I just end up drinking. It has nothing to do with the bottle, you know? That's why in sobriety, you know, the relapse is way before you actually pick up a drink. That's the end of a relapse. The relapse is when I start going back to the old way I used to live. Because that's painful. That's very painful. And then the end of it is the bottle. And this, you couldn't take that. You know, and that's what happened. So on this day, I met with my sponsor, and we sat down, and I just read exactly what I had down on these pages. You know, nothing more, nothing less. I admitted things that I never admitted to another human being. I had things that I was going to take to the grave, and I was free of them after. He shared things with me that he did and made me feel comfortable, and I swear to God, I was free of this stuff after. So much to the fact that I was able to share some of these things with people that I worked with fifth steps that I listened to, with newcomers that you know, maybe were nervous about this fourth and fifth step. You know, no, I was free of this stuff, and I don't really care who knows like that all that much about me. I'm free of the old person I used to be because I'm not him anymore. You know, I started to look at the world differently there, and I could feel a change in myself. I walked around a lot lighter. You know, I could wake up earlier and I could, you know, feel good about who I was for the first time in my life, you know. And that's all because of letting out, you know. I always thought this was a process or the steps were to build me up, right? Everything's going to build me up and you're going to show me how not to drink and how, you know, stay away and do all these things. But it's the complete opposite, see. It's to rip me apart, to break me down, you know, break me so down. That all that is left is just me and my higher power, you know. If I have a bottle of water and it's full and I want to put more water in it, what do I have to do? You know, if I have dirty water in here and I want to put clean water in here, I have to empty this water bottle out. So that's what I did. 4 and 5 was just empty, emptying out, and I felt empty after, but it was great. Because I was, my whole life I was built up with BS, with complete, ridiculous things, you know, and I started to live a new way from there, you know. I saw that as long as I don't ever go back to that way of life, I bet I'll never drink again. Now that's the hard part, though. How do I not go back to the way I was living? Well, that's why we arrive at, you know, and come to the sixth step. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, I went home after this fifth step, and I sat and I meditated for an hour, and more things did come to me, and I shared them with my sponsor, and we read the sixth step in the book, and you know, it says if you're not ready to let go of all these things, which I wasn't, to be honest. I wasn't totally ready to let go of everything. Then we pray for the willingness, and we keep praying for the willingness, and we keep praying until it actually comes. I liked some of my defects of character. I liked hitting on girls. I liked being mad at people. I liked being selfish. I liked this stuff. But I had to be entirely ready, and I was as ready as I could be at that point. And then, you know, we moved on to 7, which we get into next week. But for the longest time, I thought just 6 and 7 was just a prayer, a paragraph and a prayer in the book. But 6, it's into action for a reason. You know, there's so much action in 6. If I want, I was told that God will do for me what I cannot do. So what does that mean? That means I have to do what I can. Right? I have to act a certain way, act as if, you know, act as if I'm not selfish. If I want selfishness to be removed from me, then me just sitting on the couch all day watching TV isn't going to do it. I have to go out and actually act as if I am not selfish. And then I'll fall short, and eventually God will take this from me. You know, eventually I'll be able to just do for others. You know, that hasn't happened yet. But I am a lot less selfish than I was when I first came in, you know. This is all getting me ready. This is all fitting me to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. You know, I need to destroy everything I think I know. I need to let go of old ideas. I need to write them out on paper, cast them out, and then have them be taken from me. I need to see where I failed. Why Kevin on self-will is so horrendous and so bad. Why I always would go back to the drink. You know, why would I? Why would I always go back to the drink? And it's just because of me. It's because of who I am. It's because of what makes me. And that's it, you know. Alcoholism is so much more than putting down the drink. You know, it's so much more. And I'll tell you, I don't know if I said it earlier, but when I actually sat down and started writing this fourth step is when things really started to change for me. I knew then that I was actually willing to get sober, you know. A lot of guys ask me to sponsor them, and yeah, we read the first couple chapters, but when it's time to actually sit down by themselves and take on this thing and do it by themselves with their higher power, they don't do it. And I guess they're just not willing to get sober. You know, I wasn't willing to do that stuff the first time I came. I wasn't willing to do it the second, third, or fourth, you know. Eventually, the pain out there just got worse and worse and worse, and it made me willing. Circumstances made me willing. I couldn't come here with a plan, with an idea, another way out. There was one way out when I got here. There was one way. When I came to this group, I was a year sober, and I was ready to kill myself. I was a year removed from alcohol, and I was ready to off myself because I could not stop obsessing about a drink. I had too much pride and ego, and I couldn't ask anybody for help, you know? And it's because I didn't follow what that book said, you know? It's because I didn't turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Because I didn't do a fearless and searching moral inventory. And it got me to the point where I wasn't even drinking and I wanted to die so bad. You know, I'd stay up late at night just obsessing and trying to figure this out. And I was done. I was cooked. And God placed a man in my life that did word for word what that book says. And I thank him every single day for that. You know, I thank God for that every single day. Because without this, I am lost. I don't know. I don't even know where I am. You know, there's all bets are off because I just can't seem to do it. I can't keep myself sober and I can't live life. I'm just God awful at it. You know, but it's all good. It's all good because we have a way out. So thank you for letting me share.